I don't know, but lately it sure feels like the expansion of the universe has speeded up. I mean, something is up. There's a kind of anxiety, a frenetic pace to everything. But it probably has nothing to do with the new faster figure calculated for the rate at which the universe is expanding, that rate known as the Hubble constant. It's a big news story. A vastly new Hubble constant would just change about everything for cosmologists, anyway. Then yesterday, scientists reported on the discovery of seven Earth-sized planets that appear to be good candidates for life beyond our planet. They are a bit of a challenge for Earthling Elon Musk. They're located 235 trillion miles from Earth. He may have a way of getting there. So far, we don't. Good news, bad news, disruptive news. Jason Kendall is an adjunct professor of astronomy at William Patterson University. He joins me now. Jason, welcome back.
It's good to be here again. Thank you.
So what's your favorite, the Hubble constant or the planets?
I don't know. It's a toss-up. I mean, I studied cosmology in college, but I've really been following the exoplanet world just with wonder and just seeing how things are going on.
All right. Since you studied cosmology in college, let's start with the Hubble constant. How would it change all of physics to have a vastly faster expansion rate?
Well, it's not going to change all of physics. What it's going to do is it's actually forcing people to wonder if there is new physics that nobody else has seen yet before. The problem that's occurred is that there's two different ways that we measure it. And the first one that's been the one they used is to actually measure local phenomena. Mm-hmm. And local means within a billion light years or so. So that's kind of, that's give or take local, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
But they're looking at the expansion rate due to things like brightening stars or supernovae or Cepheid variables in various places. And then if you compare the measurements you get for the expansion rate of the universe from that compared to what you derive from the cosmic microwave background, there's a discrepancy. Mm-hmm. And so those two numbers are starting to not jibe. And the debate among the community is that discrepancy real? And what do we mean by it?
And does it affect issues like dark matter, dark energy? It does.
It does. So what it does is that it could, in theory, mean that there's not a dark energy, but rather a phantom energy, which is even more exotic. The idea of a dark energy is that it makes the universe expand and accelerate. And that's been known to occur. And that's not under debate here. What might occur is that there may be something that there's a new physics like this this extraordinarily accelerated expansion with phantom energy that could even rip atoms apart in the distant future.
All right. So how did they find these exoplanets? That's the other big story. Seven of them?
Yeah.
And seven good candidates for life beyond our planet. Does that mean there's seven in a single system?
That's right. There's seven in this system. It's probably the biggest load of planets around a star. In fact, it's the largest load of Earth-sized planets around another star. So sometimes people go, oh, what's an exoplanet? And maybe some of the listeners are like, oh, exoplanet means a planet orbiting a star other than our sun. So these are planets that orbit a star that's really small and red and cool. So all the planets are huddled in really close, like the ending dying embers of a fire at the campfire way out in the Poconos or something. So they're huddled in close. All seven are closer to their star than Mercury is to our sun.
So that means they might be warm enough or just too hot?
Well, there's three of them that live in what we call the Goldilocks zone or the habitable zone. And that is, it's not too hot, not too cold. It's just right. For what? For liquid water to potentially be on the surface. The closest of them gets the same amount of light as, say, the Earth does of those three that are in the habitable zone. The one that's in the middle gets the same amount of light from its little star as, say, Mars does. And the one that's further out gets a little bit less. But yet their average temperature seems to be that they could have liquid water on the surface.
Now, is this a star that was maybe more like our star and has burned itself out, gone into the sort of red giant phase and is now past that phase?
Actually, no. Actually, stars – that's a good question though. That's because our sun will eventually become a red giant, and it takes about 10 billion years for our sun to do that. So we're halfway there, middle life star.
Right.
But this star started small.
Started small.
And it'll stay small. So it has a lifespan of maybe a trillion years.
So it wasn't – it didn't go through a phase where everything would have been burned out in all the planets.
No. It's just – it's always been small. The planets have always been close and they've always been Earth-sized. And so these – but that's the amazing thing. They're all Earth-sized. And the other four that are in the system, could potentially have water on their surfaces too, given atmospheric conditions on the surface, and maybe they're in like pockets and pools or something like that under rocks.
So this sounds like, I mean, aside from these climate suspicions, this is a very stable system. I mean, for the last trillion years, nothing has happened?
Well, the universe is only 13.6 billion years.
Or whatever it is. Exactly. A few billion years, nothing has happened.
Well, that's true. It probably hasn't. But they're really close to each other. And one of the reasons we know they're Earth-sized is because they're so close to each other that they gravitationally interact gently. And so the timing between the transits, because how they were discovered, is that there's a gentle dip in the brightness of the star as the planets pass in front of it. And so the timing of those transits, like how long does it take between each transit, that varies just a little bit. And so you model that and you say, wait a second, these planets are pulling on each other because they're so close. They're so close that if you were standing on one of those planets, maybe in the habitable zone, you would actually see them in the sky. And you might be able to see geologic features like continents if they had them. So they would be bigger, and a few of them would be bigger than our moon is in our sky. So it would be a totally exotic place to go visit.
A great place to take pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sunsets with planets in the, I mean, wow.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, that's good. Did the Hubble telescope find these?
No, it was found actually by a Belgium group, we call it the TRAPPIST group. And what they were doing is they're simply trying to find planets around other stars. And so they're using...
Well, monks, they have a lot of free time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Lambic Ale and everything, yeah. Right? But the what they did is they actually looked out. They were trying to find planets. They found three. And the Spitzer Space Telescope, which is an infrared space-based telescope, is pointing at them and discovered four more.
Yeah, confirmed the result and gave us four more interesting things to contemplate. Jason Kendall, it's always great to talk to you.
Great to be here.
Jason Kendall is adjunct professor of astronomy at William Patterson University.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.